Hello everyone and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. Fleur de Sel says bonsoir. Val was saying cry baby. Manolis Kelly was just on Lex Friedman discussing AI and evolution. This timeline sucks. Oh my god. I went to check it out. I haven't watched the interview. But seeing that you commented on it, it brought my attention to it. Oh my god, these people. For those who remember old school JF programs, Manolis Kelly was the guy who started crying because he started by denying the revolutionary phenotype in the comment section of his last Lex Friedman interview. I started pushing back. Eventually, we get to call each other on Skype, and he's an MIT professor, and he's so dismissive, but without understanding, you know, it's like dismissive, but of things he doesn't understand. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to make a show about him. I put his face on the thumbnail and I say, when MIT professors become ignoramuses, basically I was laughing at him. But as I get to the live show, he calls me on Skype and eventually, you know, I work out with him that, hey, you're wrong about the revolutionary phenotype. Your assumption that it cannot be proteins first is wrong. And he Googles it, basically, and says, oh, all right, maybe you're right. And he had a little tear from his eye. And I had made a show about, instead of making a show about how he was stupid and not addressing the revolutionary phenotype, I had made a show called A life lesson, because I think he learned a life lesson, which is don't deny what you don't understand. It's so stunning to see him, who is supposed to be a Origins of Life researcher, go talk about super intelligent AI, knowing that he got schooled on the revolutionary phenotype. How is it that I'm not in this chair explaining the theory of phenotypic revolution? I agree with you, this timeline fucking sucks. Holy shit, it's painful. I'm almost crying, but it's not because of this. It's that I've been doing a lot of maths today and my my eyes are they've been fixating on equations all day. And that brings us to our first question for this Ask Me Anything. Luke was on Telegram and he was saying, what are you trying to do with that equation you are seeking help with? So I went on Twitter to seek for help because I was stuck on what seemed to be, to me, it seemed to be very easy. I knew that there would be mathematicians out there who would be able to help me, but I was unable to find exactly what I wanted. So I posted, I need help from a mathematician. Does anyone know of a even crude FN upper bound that can be imposed on the sum of the reciprocals of primes alongside the Meissel-Mertens constant such that ln of n plus the constant plus FN is greater than the sum of the reciprocals of primes? And this guy, basically, I knew that there would be something like this, but I just couldn't understand. Many times they use O notation. I'm not a mathematician. I don't understand O notation. I tried asking ChatGPT, Cosmic Nut. ChatGPT gave me an answer that's not as good as what this guy gave me. That is what I was looking for. 4 divided by log n plus 1 plus 2 divided by n log n. That is what I was looking for. And so to answer the question of Luke, why did I need this? It's because I'm working on the Goldbeck conjecture. After 8 years working on it, I'm making some progress. I am so close to proving the Goldbeck conjecture. I wish I could express how close I am. I have a full equation that from only the primes under a given even number, I can calculate the Goldbeck number. the number of pairs of primes that align at E divided by 2 such that E minus 1 of the prime equals the other prime. So I have a full equation. All I have to demonstrate is that this equation cannot be equal to 0. And the Merton's second theorem, Meissel-Merton's constant is a very important constant, which was extrapolated recently to some of the reciprocals of multiples of two primes. Basically, 1 divided by prime. Let's say 1 divided by 5, plus 1 divided by 7, plus 1 divided by 11. Do this until the end of time. And this is the sum of the reciprocals of prime. It is extremely important because all numbers are made of this sum. It's like all number boil down to primes being multiplied between one another. And therefore, this sum is a very special thing. And Meissel-Merton's two mathematicians helped develop an approximation of how this sum is very close to the logarithm of the logarithm of a given number. So 2 times logarithm repeated twice. And basically it's that the logarithm of the logarithm of a number, you add the Meissel-Merton's constant and it gives you very close to what the sum of the reciprocals of prime will be. Now, I was like, very close is not enough for me. Because they work at the limit. They work, if we think long enough into the high numbers, I don't want to do any of this. I do elementary math. I want to show that all numbers are respecting the Goldbach conjecture. So what I needed is a strict inequality. I needed a number that I know is always above the sum of the reciprocals of prime. So that's why I was seeking help on this. I wish I could share all of my developments, but at the same time, I'm like, I may be maybe 2 months away from a proof or 1 hour away from a proof. So at this point, it's the last stride. But I've always felt like this for the whole 8 years. I've felt like this for the 8 years of research I've done on the Goldbach conjecture. You could talk to my ex-wives, and I was like, I think I'm getting close. Even in the first year, I was like, holy shit, I'm getting close. But at this point, I am getting close. I feel it. Now, it's a feeling. It's not something you should trust necessarily. But so these last progresses that I need to do, I have to do them alone. Because if I was to publish it in the current form, I'm afraid that a mathematician could probably, a professional mathematician seeing the beginning of my work, could probably prove the Goldbach conjecture within an hour or so. But I it might take me months for doing the equivalent work. So because I'm not a mathematician, I'm just doing this as an amateur. It's pretty impressive. The depth of what I've went through to understand everything about these theorems and about the fundamental Goldbach number. The Goldbach number has been treated more or less as an estimate, and people try to put bounds. I've been calculating it. I've been developing an infinite sum that converges toward the Goldbach number exactly. And that is hard to do. But I found it. So I have infinite sum series that converge toward the Goldbach number exactly. And I'm treating the Goldbach number not just as a sum of pairs of primes that I found, but as a true elementary number of mathematics, something that must converge to something, an integer. And the goal of the conjecture, of course, is to prove that this integer cannot be zero. And I've done so much thought on what is zero? What is so special about zero? Zero is quite a crazy number, let me tell you. If you treat it additionally, it's a totally normal number. It's just one minus one. But if you treat it multiplicatively, zero is fascinating. Zero is a multiple of all numbers. Zero is a multiple of two, is a multiple of three, of four, of five. It is the center on which all primes align. They all stem from zero. And the next time all the primes find themselves is at the primorial. So there's no other number like zero, where all the primes meet right there. Because once you get to the primorial, you've already found other primes that will be that will be multiples of zero. That will be dividers of zero, but they will not be dividers of the primorial. Cloud Warmer says, stop with these low IQ interruptions. Great moments in JF history. Okay. You are being nostalgic. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, I love the way you take apart and analyze celeb drama. Will you be covering the Ali Alexander grooming scandal? Yeah, you're right. I should do this. Because I've been mostly occupied in what I've done up to now with the Ali Alexander stuff to counter this this attempted narrative of somehow the wrongs of Ali Alexander poorly reflect on Nick Fuentes, which I've been countering this. I don't think it's good reasoning. I think it's guilt by association, and I've always stood against guilt by association. That being said, I've never quite taken a stance on all the evidence of Ali Alexander. For now, what I said on my Twitter is, I'm satisfied that Ali Alexander is gay, extremely gay. That is what I retain. But you're right, we could go in depth into forgetting about the Nick Fuentes stuff, because that's a very sad attempt by the Milo bunch to somehow get at Nick Fuentes, which you can have a loose critique of his organizer capacities as a leader of the movement. But first, it's holding Nick Fuentes to a standard that he would claim to be, but he is truly not. See, Nick Fuentes is an e-celeb. His job is to attract attention and produce content. That's my root assumption. Now, he poses as a leader of a revolution, of a movement within the right of America. So be it. You can hold him to that standard, but just by the fact that he claims to be this, but not so much by the fact that he is this. Because Nick Fuentes is nothing else, and while having made peace with him, I have always stood for this idea, and I still stand for this idea, that Nick Fuentes is just a creator. Once you look at it that way, does it really matter if he was hanging out with people who, there's no evidence that they are raping people by force? But since Ali Alexander targeted young people who were unable to consent, the question is therefore opened whether there was a form of statutory rape happening in these relationships. You cannot flirt with a 15-year-old, generally, unless state laws, and there are certain states and certain places in the world where you can, but it's limit, and it's most likely that if it happened in most states of America, it would be regarded as statutory rape. Now, there is an opening of legal cases against Ali Alexander. So that is a news. which I don't know, maybe it's been talked about for a couple of days, but since yesterday I did the interview with Joel Davis, I didn't get a chance to talk about it. So people have been talking about, it seems that the police has opened up investigations about these cases. And what they were saying is we were not aware of any of these cases. The victims didn't come to us. So now that the whole thing is public and the victims, perhaps some of them have come to the police, there may be criminal cases that stem from this. In which case, yes, Ali Alexander would definitely be a person to be shunned and rejected. But that still doesn't mean that Nick Fuentes has to do some pre-crime investigation onto a bunch of rumors. You know, you have the right to due process. You have the right to have your day in court. And I would find it very unjust if we started being in a community that before prosecution is even initiated, before there's even a hint of prosecution, someone assumes based on reports and rumors and talking to people that someone else has committed a crime. So to me, the standard for Nick Fuentes' behavior is still preserved. And I don't find any offense here. If you learn that Ali Alexander was a thief and he keeps stealing people's wallets, you would have to wait for a prosecution to stop inviting this guy to conferences. Because if you act on the basis of smoke, if you hack on the principle that where there's smoke, there is fire, you're going to end up denying freedom of speech and freedom of engagement to a conference to a lot of people who have done nothing wrong. I would be one of the people you would ban from talking to, you would not engage with, if rumors only were sufficient. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, what are your thoughts on the prevalence of obesity? Do you believe when people say high calorie preferences from an evolutionary perspective are being hijacked, or is there something else to this? Is it more psychological? Is the food designed to make people fat and develop other diseases? I think that obesity is to be taken seriously and we have to fight it. Ultimately, it's going to fight itself off, because definitely obesity is not an advantage on the sexual market. So definitely, no matter what, there is a less obese future coming. So that's why we shouldn't be alarmed at it and think about it on an everyday and change society for this. We should just let it go. It's going to disappear on its own. Now, simply because obese people are less desirable on the dating market and nature therefore will converge toward whatever is needed to in terms of genes to not be fat. Other than this, I mean, it's all about the lifestyle that we give to children. Children don't need as much food as we give them, and that is the biggest problem. Parenting, especially in the poor sector of the society, because there is totally a correlation between being poor and being fat. So why is it that there is a correlation? Well, it's because cheap food is simply more caloric and more filled with stuff that is less nutritional from a holistic perspective, but more just sugar or just fat. So a child does not need that much food. That's what people have to understand. And call me, you know, I believe in a new form of education on food, which is wait until the child really is hungry before feeding them. Not to the point where they're crying or begging, but you don't have to force a schedule of input of calories at fixed time. You can go by when they feel it, when they feel it enough to ask for food. And you'll find yourself that if they have a rich enough life, they won't think about food that much. And you'll find that they don't have that much needs. A little plate with limited calories is enough to keep them going. And you have to watch their weight. And if you see that they're getting a little more fat, you cut down a little bit. You cut down on quantity and you cut down on frequency of the meals. So people have this idea of there needs to be a breakfast, a dinner, a supper. I'm totally, I think it's one of the big problems. Because if you impose three meals a day, and it's not really what the body needs, and on top of it, you're putting the cheapest food possible to be able to make it with financially throughout the week, you're going to end up making your kids fat. So have the ideology with feeding kids that they will tell you if they need something. They will tell you and make sure you track their body weight so that it remains under the recommended guidelines. Nicholas Petris says, three regular meals a day is a lot, in my opinion. Exactly. That's also my view. You know, a day where they are very hungry, two meals will suffice. And if these two meals are nutritious in terms of having meat and having eggs, you're gonna have certain days where one full meal is enough, and then certain small meals or snacks. And by snacks, I don't mean bad stuff, but it will be enough. It will be enough. Kovi Killer Clown says, JF, do you know of basal metabolic collation? That sounds very complicated. I have no idea what that is. Stephen Robinson says, your children will tell you all kinds of things. Are we to bend to the wishes of all their emotional desires? No, exactly. So you guide the child toward a lifestyle where they don't always fall back on food. There's other ways to entertain yourself during the day. You can give them access to electronics, to learning opportunities of all kind. But if you keep them occupied on something, if you do stuff with them, if they have some sort of a social life, not an imposed social life with the bullies of the elementary school, but a true social life where they can bond and have fun with other children, you're going to be, they're not going to feel the need to eat that much. If eating becomes the only thing they want and the only thing that's pleasant in their life, then they're going to fall back too much on it. Kovi Killer Clown says, basal metabolic rate, give it a quick Google. It's a scientific way to collect calories. Oh yeah, that I know. But it's the way you phrased it, that basal metabolic collation. I've never seen those words. But yeah, basal metabolic rate, it's the idea. And that is one of the big problems for people who don't do exercise and who have the genes to accumulate a lot of energy, like people who come from winter cold nations. It's this idea that just sitting, doing nothing, your body consumes a certain amount of calories. And exercising increases this basal rate. Exercising creates more of the cells that will consume more oxygen at the basal rate. That is why exercising can have a beneficial effect beyond the calories that you burn during the exercise. It's because by building your muscular mass, by building your heat production, and by heightening your basal rate of calorie consumption, you are costing more in food by doing nothing. So all day long, your body costs more to maintain. That is the idea. And that is the idea why they say that shock exercise, you know, do something that is very demanding for your muscle, but do it like 10 times and then off. That is a technique that is meant to increase the basal rate. So it increases the production of muscle and it increases your metabolic rate. So that is the idea. Yes, I'm familiar with it. Stephen Robinson says, does a schedule in life not educate or discipline for a child? I mean, there's different types of parenting, and I wouldn't judge someone who believes in schedules. But let me tell you, that schedule becomes more, in my view, and I mean, I have a weird life. I don't have anything that is set in the day except this show. So it's just for 1 hour of the day where I'm truly reserved, but the rest of my day is fully free. And that is important. I mean, if you can do this, it's definitely a privilege. Most people can't because they have work and they have a schedule. But if you can attain this, let me tell you, it's the ideal. For someone like me, I hate schedules. Like if I have a meeting at the dentist tomorrow, if I have a meeting at the dentist in 1 week from now, I start thinking about it now. And I'm like, it comes back in my head and it's like, oh yeah, don't forget, next Friday, dentist. And it's like, as long as this is not done, I cannot do anything else. It's like, oh yeah, this is so important. You have to be there at 1 p.m. dentist. It circles in my mind. So I really love having nothing to do. And when I have nothing to do, I decide on a whim, all right, it's time to go for the grocery, time to go for shopping, or time to go for this. That is how I like life. So to me, scheduling in children's lives is no, not at all. I don't do it. But if that suits you, do it. But don't then feel obligated. Like, skip a meal. Skip a meal. If you want to keep it on schedule, sure, do it on schedule when it's needed. But if your child is not hungry, there's no reason to feed them necessarily. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, regarding one of your comments to Joel, don't get in the way of people self-deleting or self-sterilizing themselves. Would you please expand upon this thought? Are you standing on the side that if other people remove themselves from the gene pool, this benefits those that remain? Well, yes, but it's actually, I don't even need to get there to make a case for this. So forget about the fact that if there's less males in society, it means my genes are more represented and therefore my evolutionary success is already increased. Forget about this, although it's true. Just think of the self-selection that encompasses joining the leftist ideology, going to public school, being taught by a professor that LGBT activism is good, thinking that you're born in the wrong sex, being revolted against the family, being revolted against your own father and mother, being so hateful that you want to show it in their face that they won't ever have grandchildren, and then wanting to chop your dick because you want to access this activist circle of, hey, I'm a girl now and treat me like it. Now, if you self-select through the 8 steps I've just listed here, can we agree that you are particularly, particularly leftist and that you are particularly at odds with reproduction? People say that that my stream is cutting out. Unfortunately, I don't have much I can do other than wait. Hopefully, you guys can refresh and let me know on the regular chat once I'm back. let me know if that fixes. I think we're back, says Nicholas Petris. Okay, Rodilacid says, jump from step 0 to step 8. So So let's repeat the steps. So imagine going to public school, being a leftist, being convinced by a professor that LGBT activism is good, hating your own parents, hating your own parents so much that you want to tell them to their face, you won't ever have grandchildren from me. Believing that you're born in the wrong sex, being convinced by the therapist and all that you do have to cut your dick to be happy, wanting to be, feeling suicidal if you don't get this surgery, and then eventually actually doing it, and then imposing on others the conception of your own sex, the idea that you are a girl now and that you must be treated as one. All of this, to me, points to a set of behaviors that are extremely disruptive, extremely anti-evolutionary, extremely damaging for society. There's a lot there. Once you've passed through these 8 steps, I can guarantee that you have a very, very, very special brain. Now we should ask if these brains are systematically leading to people down paths where they don't make babies. Will they still be here, these brains, in 100 years from now? Well, no. I mean, something's got to change. Either people will become more resistant to the propaganda, people will develop some sort of disgust for these medical operations. Whatever it is that happens, the future is without this phenomenon, or with a greatly reduced frequency. Not because it's a fad, but because it's an unfit behavior. So then you have to ask yourself, you don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. This behavior will go down in frequency with time. So it's barely a moral question here. There's no choice. It's going to happen. Now, the moral question then becomes, and this is my answer to your super chat, the only moral content here that I can perceive is, do we want the JF way to say, hey, oh, okay, you want to sterilize yourself? Go for it. Here, I'll give you a free consultation at the dentist at the doctor's office. Or do we go the Joel Davis road, which is, let's try to fix this person with the Bible. Here. Paul said in Paul 2:15, blah, 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 blah. Invest all sorts of effort to save as many people as you can, knowing that the future is converging toward a lower and lower frequency. So what is the true moral choice here with respect to the trans question? It is, just how long and painful do you want the drop to be? And I'm a scratch the band-aid straight type of guy. I'm like, okay, there is pain here. There is a lot of suffering. There is a lot of suicidal tendencies, a lot of depression, a lot of parents being totally shocked that the single child that they have, that they have invested everything in their case-selected strategy of funneling all their parental service to a single person, and this single person will never have children. That is a lot of human suffering. And to me, first, there's the deontological consideration that I'm a libertarian, so that is the great priority, which is, if you want to self-select out of the gene pool, I can't object. But second, even by harm considerations, you are making it a longer drop on longer timescales that will make more people suffer for every single person that you convince out of the LGBT activism route. Why would you do this? For every person that you save, they're going to have children that are going to be more likely to create more suffering and to suffer themselves. Now, it doesn't really matter by how much they're more likely. Some, You know, some people like Joel Davis intimated this yesterday in the interview. I didn't go into the details, but he claimed that, oh, well, that's assuming that genes cause those behaviors. It's assuming that those genes are not, that any gene is anywhere more than zero correlated to this behavior. In other words, it doesn't matter whether there's not a gene for being trans or whether there's not a gene that causes you 50% chance of being trans. If there's only a gene that causes you to be 0.0001% more likely to be trans, then it's an evolutionary question. And then my argument on the slope of time that you need before the full reduction of frequency is to be expected is valid. It just extends over either thousands of years or millions of years. But the argument remains the same. If any gene leads you to be anyhow more revolutionary, leads you to be anyhow more attentive to what the public school teacher says, leads you to anyhow hate your parent, if any single gene in the human genome, the whole human genome, has any effect on these things, my argument is valid. Well, it seems that Odyssey is having troubles tonight, downstream. I had issues starting the thumbnail, so I'm not surprised that we're having issues. I don't know. What if I try refreshing? Down, buffering and looping. Dropped frames. Buffering and looping, longer time scales. I don't know what to do, my friends. Yeah, it does seem that the stream has disappeared. We may not be able to have a very long show tonight. What should we do? Maybe I'm going to cut the show. Maybe I'm going to cut the show and at least upload what we have here. Guys, sometimes Odyssey is not perfect, so... Yeah, I can't do anything, boys. I've completely lost also. All right. I'll upload what we've done, what we've filmed up to now, and I'll call it a night. Odyssey doesn't seem to be working. It's okay. I'll go rest tonight, and I'll be even more in shape tomorrow. Let's see. What do I have on schedule? Podcast appearance next Thursday. Other than this, we're good. So thanks for being here. Sorry for the technical issues, guys, and we'll take our revenge tomorrow. Bye-bye.